1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rockers. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the forever young international star who continues to preach the power of rock, exhorting the congregation to get up.
Baby, just can't stand another lonely night.
Both of the songs that I gave him were songs that I had written for. They were written for a TV pilot that never happened, about a band, like a band in the 60s. I was quite happy that it never happened because I loved the songs on the album.
That's rock and roll. That's rock and roll. You gotta live it or you'll never know. That's rock and roll. That's rock and roll.
Do you know what I was channeling when I was singing that song? I was thinking about Freddie Mercury. I was thinking about how, you know, when Freddie sang, he was always so emotive and he always was convincing. So I was kind of thinking Freddie. Hi, this is Brian Adams and get up in the studio with Redbeard.
Running the numbers on Bryan Adams' spectacular career are eye-popping. Worldwide sales in excess of 65 million. Some estimates are closer to 100 million sold. Nominated for every conceivable award multiple times, including the Oscars 3 times. A winner of the American Music Award, MTV Video Award, and a Grammy. As convincing as this level of international popularity certainly is, though, the top-notch sales and acclaim tends to obscure the fact that Bryan Adams is finding no easy path to sharing music with his legions of fans. To the contrary, it seems as though certain media gatekeepers perceive past popularity as a liability. This is pretzel logic to most music fans. But as Pink Floyd's Nick Mason told me here in the studio, and I quote, "Each rung of the career ladder is equidistant." Bryan Adams has a bunch of songs to sing, and regardless of the technology or the times, it certainly hasn't gotten any easier. Album number 13, buddy.
I know, it went fast.
I'll say. Apparently you've been woodshedding new songs for like 7 years, apparently, and some of these on Get Up are equal to the best work you've ever done.
That's really kind of you. Yes, some of them were around, maybe not as long as 7 years, because most of the songs were written over the last 2 years. But there were ideas that were floating around that were, you know, needed to be finished, and that's how it all started.
How and when did you first meet Jeff Lynne?
We met back in the 80s. He came to see one of my shows.
Was he with George Harrison at that time?
No, that was the second time I met him. We did a show in Birmingham, and he came with a bunch of his friends. And then I think shortly after that, I did the Prince's Trust in London, and both Jeff and George were there for that.
What have you admired about Jeff's work with The Move and then the Electric Light Orchestra over the years?
I guess the consistency of sound and song. I mean, just, you know, I mean, when we were making records years ago, we would talk about, you know, who are the best producers and who would be a good producer to work with. And of course Mutt Lange came up, and Mutt and I did a couple of albums together. And then of course Jeff Lynne. So now I can say I'm one of the few artists in the world that's actually worked with Mutt and Jeff.
Yeah. I take the night train, I take an airplane, 'cause you belong. I just wanna say, ain't gonna let you get away, 'cause you belong to me. I only wanna hold you. I just
Chugging like a midnight train to Memphis, Brian Adams teaming with ELO's Jeff Lynne on You Belong to Me provides an infectious, undeniable beginning to Brian Adams' Get Up album. Now, you mentioned that it's all started with just a couple of songs. What were the first sparks that got this thing going?
The first song we did together was You Belong to Me, and he really did a number on that song. I mean, it's the demo has a great vibe, but the master is class. And I can literally remember walking in the studio and he said, "What do you think of this?" And he put it on. I was just, after I finished picking my jaw off the floor, I was like, "Yeah, I think you got it." And then we literally put down a couple of guitars to just, in, you know, where we played together. And that was it. Job done.
Wow.
Yeah, and the second song we did was a song called Don't Even Try. He liked it because it sounds, in his words, a bit like a Beatle outtake. It sounds like a outtake of Rubber Soul or something, you know, which is exactly what it was supposed to be, because both of the songs that I gave him were songs that I had written for. They were written for a TV pilot that never happened, about a band, like a band in the 60s. And I was quite happy that it never happened because I loved the songs on the album.
You've gotten fortunate with that before on some projects. I think back to Heaven was a much more famous song than the movie that it came from.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, but I guess it's just about having something to work for. You know, sometimes getting to step outside of yourself and do something, you know, for outside project is really, it's exciting and different. But, you know, going forward on the record, we started having discussions about what the album needed, and this is Jim and I, and we started writing for our producer and sort of writing for the project, songs that were going to enhance the ones we already had. And the songs came quickly.
You've taught me over the years that usually the best ones do.
I think that happens for everybody. The best songs always happen pretty quickly.
It's all right tonight. What can you do? It's all right tonight. Over you, you took the love she gave and then you threw it all away. No time for goodbye, don't even try, don't even try.
try. How can a song come in and out of focus depending on the instrumentation used or the tempo set?
So how do you mean?
Well, let me give you an example. When I first got a hold of the album Get Up, As I always do, I sat down, I listened to it from beginning to end, and I marked the songs that really, upon first listen, really jumped off the record to me, and I really thought, you know, had a great potential. Then I got to the acoustic songs, just you and acoustic guitar, that close out the last, four tracks on Get Up. And there's one on there called Don't Even Try. And I just go, wow. And I wrote down, here's my notes that I actually wrote on the CD. Very Lennon rubber soul.
So,
and here's the thing, though, Bri. Going through the full arrangements, I didn't necessarily pick Don't Even Try as one of my initial favorites. It wasn't until I heard the stripped down voice and guitar on Don't Even Try that I, quote unquote, got it. And I reassessed everything on the whole album, and I thought, man, these songs are some of the best things he's ever written.
You know, Redbeard is really frustrating because I love this album so much. I really think it's one of the best things I've ever done, and I don't know what to do with it. And that's why I wrote to you, because no one had contacted you from the record company or anything, and I thought, I know Redbeard, I'm just going to write to you. And
I'm glad you did, buddy.
And I wanted you to hear it because... I just knew that you'd appreciate it being the rocker that you are. So I'm just kind of reaching out to all my contacts that I've had over the years to say, hey, check this out, guys, because I think it's my best work.
Some more songs on Get Up. That's Rock and Roll and Brand New Day. Two wonderful songs, and they're both fully realized in the songwriting, in the performance, and the arrangement. What I want to know is, how do you, at, 50-something, with, a daddy twice over, a veteran now of the music business, how do you infuse That's Rock and Roll and Brand New Day with a vitality, an exuberance that has little to do with chronological age, but rather being young at heart? How do you do that?
I think you just answered the question. I just think you answered the question. It's I have the same exuberance and enthusiasm for writing music now as I ever have. I don't know if I write the same songs as I used to write, but I think these stand up, and the true test of it is playing it live. These songs feel like they've been in the set already for a long time. I'm so excited to be back on tour with it, because we just finished playing in Europe. We just did the first sort of month of shows, and I didn't want to go home. I just wanted to carry on because it was so good. I'm really excited to bring it back to America, and that's what I do. That's what I know what to do. I know how to go and deliver a show. So that's what I'm going to be doing here for probably the next. I think I'm going to try and work this record for a couple of years until everyone hears it.
Until you're on your feet, I'm talking Buddy, I'm talking Elvis. You gotta shake it to the drummer's beat. Yeah, that's rock and roll. That's rock and roll. You gotta live it or you'll never know. That's rock and roll. That's rock and roll. Yeah. Just
ain't no audience, there ain't no show. That's Rock and Roll from Bryan Adams, exhorting us all to get up. Here's a quote you made recently that you said, working with Jeff Lynne brought out the best in me and co-writer Jim Vallance. How so?
Well, it's like having comfortable shoes. And when you get comfortable shoes, you can walk a mile. And that's the best analogy I can give you. We were comfortable. We were working with somebody, but we always wanted to work with. And every time something came back, it was like Christmas. And it just got exciting. You know, the more we did, the more excited we got, and the more we wanted to do. And I mean, I could have carried on, except he was making his own album.
Next, Bryan reveals his vocal inspiration in a touching tribute to Queen's Freddie Mercury on this album. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, on Twitter at Redbeard Rocks, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Bryan Adams in the studio for Get Up.
Hi, this is Bryan Adams, and Get Up in the Studio with Redbeard.
On this inspiration that Jeff, and once again I'm quoting you, he brought out the best in me and co-writer Jim Vallance. Is Jeff Lynne's contribution active or passive? Does he demand excellence or does he inspire excellence?
I think he inspires. But at the same token, he'll always tell me if I've done good or not, or if I could do better, or if he'd like to hear it again. You know, and he was never demanding in things. It was always like, you know, just try it again, you know. And occasionally we get together and do a vocal at his studio, and I would never sing it more than two or three times. And he'd go, you know, that's good, great. I would sing it straight through. It wasn't even start and stop. It's just like, just go sing the song.
Wow, full stop.
Yeah, just go and do it. And that's how I do it anyway. But so in terms of his being demanding, if he had a puzzle, generally speaking, he'd either come to me and say, I think you could do this again, or he'd work it out and send me back a version that he thought was sort of the missing piece. And 9 times out of 10, that's what would happen.
Well, that's the facility of having an expert musician and arranger as well as a producer, because he can show you as well as use words, he can actually show you musically, and that's great.
Well, that's right. I mean, like on Don't Even Try, I think the riff goes down, 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 down. And then the original riff was down, 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 down. It was a whole other thing, you know?
Oh.
And it was like trying to work out the puzzle. And one day he just sent me the thing, and that he'd worked it out.
If I'm gonna go down, I'm gonna go down rocking. I ain't gonna slow down. I'm gonna go down rocking. No one gonna tell me what to say or tell me what to do. You can't tell me what to play. You think you know, but you ain't got a clue. If I'm gonna go down, I'm gonna go down rocking. I ain't gonna slow down. I'm gonna go down rocking. Yeah. You can't tell me where to go. They try to put me in my place. She don't know by now that you're never gonna know. If you got a problem, better tell me to my face. Go down rockin'.
It's a pretty safe assumption that collaborating over the internet between London, Canada, and LA is certainly very convenient. But what are the creative and the practical challenges to making an album that way?
You got to have the right players. You got to have the right people involved. It's never easy to put together songs, but it's easier when you get the right people. And in this case, working with Jim again, obviously, it's just fantastic, and it's been a long time coming. And over the last sort of 10 years or 12 years, slowly but surely, we've come to this point where, you know, we're back at it as we were when we were starting out in the 80s and working on Cuts Like a Knife, and, you know, which I think back in about 83, 84, like some of the most creative years we had up until recently, where we've been working on this album and a number of different projects and it's just been, the songs keep coming and keep coming. But again, you know, I don't really know what to do with music anymore, because it's so different. And, you know, it's 6 months into the album, and I finally had a conversation with the record company like last week. Do you know what I mean? It's a whole different world.
In that regard, it is. But, you know, people haven't changed. The audience hasn't changed.
Well, I know that. And here's the funny thing. I mean, my album came out, went to number 2 in England and top 10 around the world, except in America it was 99. And I'm sure we speak the same language.
I was doing the night shift, you were a dancer. Here and there, searching everywhere for an answer. Two hearts are better than one, will never come undone.
On the song We Did It All, when you sing in the chorus, "We did it all and we do it again," and you sing it so earnestly and so emotionally, you know, at the top of your range, what, as a singer, as a performer, what memories, what images are conjured up in your head to get you to that emotional place that the song requires?
You know what I was channeling when I was singing that song? I was thinking about Freddie Mercury.
Ooh.
I was thinking about how, you know, when Freddie was sang, he was always so emotive, and he always was convincing. So I was kind of thinking Freddie.
On That's Rock and Roll, you sing, "If there ain't no audience, then there ain't no show."
It's an old adage, but it's a good one.
It certainly is.
We open the show with "Do What You Gotta Do," and one of the other songs on the record is "Go Down Rocking," which is serious corker live. I mean, one of the things I've been saying about this record since it came out is I wish I'd put it out 25 years ago, because there's so much. I can see myself end up playing most of this live eventually.
You have three significant album anniversaries coming this year. I don't know if you're aware. Waking Up the Neighbors, one of the most popular albums in history by anybody. It's the anniversary of 18 Till I Die. And believe it or not, it'll be the anniversary that put you and me together. You want it, you got it. It will be this summer.
No way.
Yes, way. I know it seems impossible. I did a double take because I thought I must be computing the numbers wrong.
35 years ago. Wow.
It doesn't seem possible.
It's not possible.
Well, it is. And when when you take that into context and you listen to Get Up, you go, man, you know, this guy, you know, maybe this guy could be doing motivational speaking for the rest of us, because it gets me up.
Thanks, Beard. It's nice of you to say. You know, I can't attribute to, again, to anything else other than just the fact that I love what I do. And it's an inspiration when you get the opportunity to, for example, working with Jeff and getting Jim back in the fold, and all this sort of meeting of the minds of musically, which is good alliteration also. But you know, it's nice when it all works.
Do you think your mother's creative zest has anything to do with that vitality in your creative work at this point in your career?
My mother, wow.
She's a corker.
Well, it's interesting. Have you ever met her?
No, but I read an interview with her, and she is just a bon vivant.
Everybody loves my mother. She is a real tour de force, and she's 88.
Oh man.
Oh man. I mean, I hope I make it that far and have my act together as much as she does, you know. And we could only hope that we live that long and still have our noodle, you know.
Well, but you've also made it clear that, you know, it's not just living long, but it's living well.
Well, it's actually taking care of yourself, and that's really important. So I think obviously there are some genetics, and I would love it if I have the same enthusiasm for things as my dear mom, but I also think it's about what you put into yourself and how you take care of yourself and how you go about things on a day-to-day basis. And you know, I love what I do, and I think that really helps, you know, to sort of inspire vitality, because you really have to you're lucky if you get to do what you do. But it should be the thing you focus on most. You should strive to always do what you want to do. In fact, that's one of the names of one of the songs on the record, "Do What You Gotta Do."
There you go. Well, I think it's good advice. Another song on Get Up, "Yesterday Was Just a Dream." Is this in some way maybe the flip side of "We Did It All"? Maybe the more melancholy, you know, winsome side of "We Did It All"?
I never thought about that. I'll have to go back and listen to it again. Okay, with that in mind. But I mean, I think it's good to have contrasts. So if you feel that there's a contrast there, I think that's a good thing.
Okay. What I do know for a fact is that there's great tight harmony on the choruses on Yesterday Was Just a Dream. That kind of almost like, you know, Don and Phil kind of tight harmony that is so good when it's done right.
Well,
I hear a cover version by Blake Shelton coming soon.
You know, that could be the best compliment you've ever given me. You know, if I'm Don and Phil, I mean, I'm happy with that.
Optimism and the pure love of the human spirit embodied in music like Brand New Day that has sustained Bryan Adams' spectacular career. And next, Bryan shares the memories, the dreams, and the music from his first significant album, You Want It, You Got It. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with Bryan Adams.
Hi, this is Bryan Adams, and get up in the studio with Redbeard. You know, I'm having incredible deja vu here, Redbeard, because I'm sitting in a room in New York where I rehearsed my very first recording in New York. I'm in the room right now where I rehearsed Lonely Nights and that whole You Want It, You Got It album. And I'm sitting in the rehearsal space. It just suddenly struck me, holy shit, I'm in the room that I rehearsed that, and it hasn't changed either. It's got the same bad carpeting everywhere. They put mirrors in the room. That's the only thing that's different. I'm going to take those down right away.
Oh!
Songs on You Want It, You Got It still hold up for you, and why?
I think Lonely Night still holds up because it's just a damn good song, and occasionally we play it still. That's probably the one off that album that still gets played. We played Tonight the other day when we were in Lisbon, because it was actually a minor hit in Portugal.
There you go.
And for me personally, I still like Jealousy, and as I sort of run the album titles in my head, or the song titles in my head, I think No One Makes It Right, which is the last song on the record as well.
I still love, besides the ones that you've said, One Good Reason.
Oh, and, yeah. Gosh,
and,
I forgot about that
fits
one.
You, and Fits You Good.
Oh, I forgot about that one, too. Oh, yeah. The, yeah, I mean...
Those really, to me, those really hold up. I mean, time's the toughest, you know, arbiter of all of anything creative. And sometimes I just reach for, you know, One Good Reason, Fits You Good, Lonely Nights, and I'm a happy camper.
Well, the reason I guess maybe they've stood the test of time in some regard is that it was an album that was sort of tried and tested on tour, and playing clubs. I learned those songs and I got the arrangements together pretty much between the demos and playing them live. And so when I went to make this record in here in New York in 1981, I had a really good idea of how, and I made recordings of them with a little cassette machine, on how I wanted the vibe to come off live. And that album was a quick record. It took 2 weeks.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, we recorded the whole thing and mixed it in 2 weeks. I couldn't afford to do it any longer. I didn't have any money.
I understand. You know, Mutt used to take 2 weeks to get the drum sounds right.
Well, that's true.
The curtain, no more lies, I'm tired of hurting. I think you know what I mean. There's an empty sound the lonely makes. Don't know how much more that I can take. And yesterday is just a dream. Yesterday is just a dream. Nothing's ever what it seems. Tomorrow's coming, it won't be long. Yesterday was here and gone. Words tumble out like an open book, while the world was turning, something shook. From a whisper to a scream. Rain's beating down on the window pane, makes me wonder about you again. Yesterday was just a dream. Yesterday was just a dream. Nothing's ever
forgiven, and your smile is so serene.
Yesterday is just a dream. Nothing's ever what it seems. Tomorrow's coming, it won't be long. Yesterday
Adams doing his best Phil and Don Everly tight harmony on Yesterday Has Come and Gone from Get Up. Finally, I asked Brian what his secret is to such youthful vitality and exuberance.
There's no real secret other than perhaps I'm a veggie, and that's, you know, strict veggie. But first of all, you got to understand, I love what I do, so that's it's not a big stress for me to get up in the morning and do my work. So I got a great job, and so I've been blessed with, you know, great people around me, and I've got really, really, you know, inspiring musicians to work with, and there's no end to how much work I could do if I wanted to. I mean, I have to always put the choker on my manager, because, you know, if it's up to him, we'd be working every day. You know, and there's no end to it, and it feels right. So there's lots more to look forward to. There's a whole world out there, and I'm gonna try and take it in if I can. You know, the only thing that's small about it are the coincidences of us, you know, bumping into each other. But in the same, by the same token, we live in a small community, you know, and most people do. You know, they travel in a circle that they know, and when you do break out of that circle and you go somewhere else, it's vast. You know, you'll never see everything here, and neither will I. We'll never get to see it all, and we'll never get to do all the things we wanted to do either, because there's just too much. But you can sure try.
Hits You Good comes from Bryan Adams. You want it? You got it. I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guest, Bryan Adams. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.